you know, in the 20th century and after, and I don't know how far before that it started, but that responsibility given to parents to raise their children in the fear and admonition of the Lord, discipline and instruction of the Lord, has somehow been turned on its head, mm-hmm. where the parents are following their children around based on their children's tastes, their children's desires. So everything's become somewhat child-centered. So
in our day of such anxiety, in our day of such restlessness of children, one of the best things you can do is have them sit and be quiet and listen to the Word of God from the youngest age with the family to be taught and instructed in the truth.
Yep. And my point is just to say, so that's the fruit of this pursuit of building ministries around children, mm-hmm. that it's sort of the whole church becomes infantilized. Like, yes. No one ever matures past the age of adolescence.
Right. The Chad Vegas is back, definite article, in the studio today, the AGR studio, as we seek to cause some trouble.
Yeah, that's what we're seeking. How can we be a troubler in Israel? That's it. Life goal.
Yesterday we did two programs. You're here, so brought you back in today. And what did we do yesterday? We did conspiracy theories, and then what was the other one?
We talked about something else. Oh, California.
California.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Should I stay or should I go?
Should I stay or should I go? That's exactly right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's what we talked about.
Thinking about, yeah. The great question, why did God leave us here in the first place? So, John 17. I enjoyed those discussions. So today, this is Chad's idea solely. With Chad, I never really plan. I just say, what's in that head? And of course, something's in that head.
Something.
Yeah. And Chad's idea for today is child-centered church attendance.
Absolutely.
You think we can get 40 minutes out of that?
Oh, I mean, we could talk about that for days. Child-centered everything.
Child-centered everything.
Yeah.
It is an issue why people attend a church, why parents attend a church, why they are involved in a church. The choices that people should make in attending a church, I always say, this is probably one of the most important decisions you'll ever make in life. They always would say, you know, your two biggest decisions are buying a house and a car financially. The biggest decision spiritually is the church that you attend.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I mean,
undoubtedly.
For your family, for your children, for your future, for how your mind is shaped, for your very salvation, right?
That's exactly right.
And so, but that's not how people think when it comes to the church today. How do you think, and you come out of evangelicalism, of course, I do too in a certain way. I was in the Reformed tradition my whole life, but a Reformed tradition that often wanted to be evangelical. So all these same pressures were there, and I saw all the same temptations. Some of the approaches and end results were a little different just due to culture and family. But this great sort of, I think, propensity of people today to elevate their children to the place of primacy in every decision they make in life and in the day of the cult of the child really does have a damaging effect when it comes to the church.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, in the 20th century and after, and I don't know how far before that it started, but not too long before that, we saw a major shift in the notion of the family, I think. And, you know, when you think about, for example, Ephesians 6:4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up. And Calvin argues that's fondly cherish them, right? In the discipline and instruction of the Lord, that responsibility given to parents to raise their children in the fear and admonition of the Lord, discipline and instruction of the Lord, has somehow been turned on its head. Mm-hmm. Where the parents are following their children around based on their children's tastes, their children's desires. So everything's become somewhat child-centered. So school has become child-centered, education. So now the schools ask really, how do we deliver something children want mm-hmm. that they enjoy? And it's like, wait, you are supposed to shape the tastes of children, not accommodate them. So if I give my child ice cream and sugar.
That's why you have parents, by the way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The schools are supposed to be helping parents. Mm-hmm. And parents are supposed to be shaping the tastes of their children, not accommodating the tastes of their children. My child wants sugar all the time. Doesn't mean I should give them sugar all the time. I have to help shape the tastes of my child. Well, the same thing is true with spiritual things. I don't just find out what, you know, essentially tastes good spiritually to my children. Let's give them more of that. I'm supposed to be shaping their tastes. So say,
and building character.
Well, that's right. But that's exactly what I'm saying is, what do they love? Mm-hmm. What do they desire? What do they think is good and right and true, right? Like, what are those things? Mm-hmm. Are you shaping that, or are you just following around? You know, it's like, instead of every wind of doctrine, every whim of your child. Mm-hmm. So the child likes this church because it provides all of these children's programs that the child really likes. You don't ask the question, are they teaching the Bible to my children? Are they catechizing, like teaching them the Christian faith? You're just saying, did my child have fun? Mm-hmm. Did they enjoy themselves? Do they love it? Do they want to come back? Okay, well, I mean, you know, there are like all kinds of entertainment venues in town. Your child will want to come back to every Sunday if you take them.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And those entertainment values, what you're essentially parents are, I think, are doing in many cases, are just swapping the name church onto it. And it's like a bounce house.
Yeah, the bouncy houses lose their luster after a while with children, by the way.
Yeah. But I mean, I feel like parents are perpetually picking bounce houses for their kids and calling it church. Mm-hmm. So it's like a children's bounce house. And here they love the video games. I mean, I know churches in town, the formula. When I was in a church that was formulated toward church growth. So you were like an evangelical poser, a wannabe in the CRC, right? The CRC did evangelicalism poorly. It didn't really know how to go all the way there. And so it looked extra lame.
Yeah, when they tried to sing the contemporary songs after a long tradition of singing the Psalms, it was one of the worst experiences under the sun. They could never do it as well.
No, right? They can't. It was terrible. It was goofy. Yeah. But the big church evangelicals dialed that, right? They dialed it. They had the rockin' band and the robotic lighting and the fog machines. They still do. We realized, we knew, you had to do two things to pack people in. You had to have an amazing children's ministry, which meant really first-rate facilities. And first-rate facilities on every level. That didn't just mean you had the coolest jungle gyms and you had the coolest looking building classrooms. It also meant that your safety protocols and security protocols were top notch. Everything had to be top notch. Mm-hmm. And then you had to have the most fun activities, fast pace, children love it. And if you could just squeeze in a Bible verse or some kind of Christian thought, wouldn't that be nice too?
Yeah.
So you had to have great music for the children, very colorful, first-rate facilities, a lot of entertainment value. And if you did that really well, and you had all the programs, camps and mm-hmm. you know, vacation Bible schools and everything you needed, just so your children, it's like, I can turn them over mm-hmm. and they're wildly entertained. And then you had a rocking band in the worship service. If you could do those two things, the church is going to be huge. That's it. That's the formula. The pastor's preaching can be mediocre at best. If the band is rocking and the children's ministry is first rate, you are going to pack people in. Now, if the pastor can speak, like be a great motivational speaker, or in the evangelical world, a more conservative evangelical world, be a good Bible expositor, and you can mix that with a rocking band and a first rate children's ministry, that place is going to, it's just going to grow like a weed. It's going to grow so fast.
When I was up north, that model where all these Reformed people were entering into the local sort of, it was like a Saddleback model church when that was still going. And so all these Reformed people were going, and it was all for the kids. And I'll never forget, what they had was like a 1968 Dodge van, and they called it the Ministry Machine. And so, So
like this, Scooby-Doo so and the Mystery Machine.
Yeah, so this really ultra-hip youth pastor would drive around into town, the Ministry Machine, find kids, open up the back of the van, which is kind of cringy and creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way,
it's really nerve-wracking.
Open up the back of the van.
I'm getting nervous, yeah.
And there would be, you know, video games lined in the back of the van. Yeah, yeah. So the kids could come in. And this was, they knew just what they were doing. This was their ticket. If they could get the children, they could get the parents.
Absolutely. And maybe parents don't know this. In the 90s, so the youth ministry model, late 80s and through the 90s, there was a group called Youth Specialties, which was pushing all sorts of garbage. I mean, literally, they had an entire magazine edition that was primarily dealing with self-pleasuring and teaching youth how to do that for the glory of God, which is just
unbelievable.
Unbelievably appalling.
Yeah, it's appalling.
But Youth Specialties was pushing this model that here's what you do. You go get the most popular kids in high school, the best looking girls, the best looking guys, the ones who influence everybody. You put them on the stage in your youth group as much as you can. I mean, I know churches that did this. I took over youth ministry, that this was the model, not with the pastor immediately prior to me, but the guy just before him. And the idea was you put the coolest, hippest, most connected people at the high school on stage, and all the other youth will come. They'll all come. And the thought was, this is the best way to evangelize them. Get the coolest, hippest youth group, and you'll have the best evangel. So that was kind of the motivation, the best evangelistic opportunities. And then parents wondered why, when their children started graduating high school, they had no more interest in the church.
Well, and there's other reasons for that. Then you'd have organizations like YWAM that would come in and scoop them up and take them to some, you know, distant country.
Teach them bad theology.
Teach them bad theology and go to distant country and, you know, serve the poor people and then come back to the church. And like, well, this isn't where it is.
Yeah.
This isn't real ministry. This isn't where the power is. This is boring. So everything has been programmed into them for the sort of sensual experience, right? In all these things. And a misconception of what ministry is, right?
Yeah. And what's been the fruit of that? Now the adults who grow up under that clamor for the main service to become essentially a youth group for adults.
Right.
It's basically a 90s youth service for full-grown adults.
Which is interesting because I always thought, we always say, well, the parents are doing it for their kids. But I did often think along the way, no, I think they're doing it for themselves.
Oh, yeah. They think that this is what people want. Unbelievers will come. It's actually not what happens. What happens is disenchanted Christian people float around for the greatest thing. It isn't attracting unbelievers. I've met unbelievers who come in and say, this is odd. I remember sitting next to a guy on a plane.
And I
don't know if I told you the story. I got bumped up to first class. Maybe I've told you this before. I got bumped up to first class on a flight to New York because I had been flying so much doing films. So I got a free upgrade. So I'm sitting next to this guy on the way to New York who, he owns a box at the Buffalo Bills, for the Buffalo Bills, but he lives in LA. He owns a box because he grew up in that part of the country. And he's a pretty well-known movie director, actor, producer. Like, he's been in all kinds of well-known movies. Very famous guy. I didn't actually know who he was at first, but then he told me what he's involved in. And I was like, oh, you're kind of famous. So I was talking with him. And I started talking about the gospel and about the church. And I said, so what do you think about the Christian church? What do you think? He says, well, I've been to a couple and they do this. Like, I've been and I noticed they have like fog machines and a band and you know. And I said, well, what'd you think about all that? He says, I thought to myself, do they think this is what I want?
Mm-hmm.
I said, what do you mean? He said, well, if I want that, why wouldn't I just go to a concert?
Yeah.
He said, you think, like, you all claim there's a God who created the universe.
Who's holy.
Who's holy. He created the universe. He controls all things. That I'm a sinner. I'm going to go to hell. And he came in flesh and then he died on the cross.
Most serious thing in all the world.
Yeah, he died on the cross and rose from the dead. You want me to believe all of that? And you think somehow a rock band is going to convince me of that,
right.
I'm going to think you're crazy because you believe that. So he told me, he goes, you're crazy. The fact that you believe that is crazy.
Right.
I don't care how cool your worship service is or your church service or whatever he called it. And so there's some kind of lie that goes out there that somehow unbelievers are looking for this. Mm-hmm. Listen.
I don't know. Do you think it's that? I've always thought the modern approach to those things is just to hijack Christians out of traditional churches.
Well, no, I think that's the justification that's given. Mm-hmm. This is how you reach unbelievers. And I think there are people who sincerely believe that.
Yeah.
but I do think a lot of people confuse what they want with what will reach unbelievers. Mm-hmm. They want more entertainment.
Right. No, I think that's exactly right.
So want that. And my point is just to say, so that's the fruit of this pursuit of building ministries around children. Mm-hmm. That it's sort of the whole church becomes infantilized. Like no one ever matures past the age of adolescence.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then that gave to the rise along the way. I don't know when this thing started. Maybe you know. But that gave the rise to children's church.
Right? Oh, yeah.
And so then, you know, at some point, somebody thought it was a good idea that you'd have big people's church, you know, where the guys up there giving messages the children can't understand, which was a faulty premise to begin with. But then they would send them out to do the most entertaining things. So you'd take a portion of teachers out of the church when they need the means of grace, and they would spend time with all the children. So the children are excised and brought out of worship. And then you wonder why you have a mass exodus of young adults leaving the church today. Well, you taught them that from the beginning.
Well, when I was a youth pastor, we literally called it big church.
Yeah.
And the children were dropped off in the nursery as babies and essentially picked up when they graduated from high school. And then when they graduated from high school, I remember my youth saying to me, well, I'm going to go look for a church now. I said, well, you go to this church. Well, this isn't my church. I graduated from my church. Where am I supposed to go now?
Right.
This is your church. They had really never been a part of the main service of the church and didn't find it to be particularly recognizable. That's a problem. I've participated in all of that. And so I don't look down my nose at people. I understand what you're thinking. Well, this pastor is preaching isn't age graded for my child. So my child isn't really going to understand it. They're going to sit here and not understand it. They're going to be bored by it. They're not going to enjoy it. As if boredom is the ultimate sentence of condemnation. Mm-hmm. Like that's the worst thing that could happen to your child is they're bored. That's not true. Actually, it's fine if they're bored. They will get over it. They're not going to connect with it. And then they're going to hate the church because they had to come and sit under this mm-hmm. their whole life.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps you should instruct them on why it's good for them to be there. And you may be surprised at how much they absorb of the sermon well,
that
you don't think they will.
Right. It is remarkable what children take in.
Remarkable. I have children say stuff to me every mm-hmm. Sunday that blows me away. I think, I wish adults understood this as well as some of these kids.
Right.
And even little ones, I think, oh, wow, you picked that up. The other thing is, Chris, is just the simple fact that if you don't have the vocabulary for something, you can't think it.
Right.
You don't have the ability to think it. So why would you not want to enculturate your children
and train them from the earliest of days?
Yeah.
To sit there. And in our day of such anxiety, in our day of such restlessness of children, right, where there's no discipline, one of the best things you can do is have them sit and be quiet and listen to the word of God from the youngest age with the family, to be taught and instructed in the truth.
Yep. So one of my pastors, his daughter, who I think is in first grade, she's somewhere around that age, five, six, seven years old. She's sitting in the sermon and she's learning about, we're in John 20. And it says that they thought that Jesus was a gardener. Remember that passage? Thought Jesus is a gardener. So they're in the garden. They're in a garden where the tomb was. And they suspected Jesus was a gardener. And she looks at her parents and goes, because he's the second Adam.
It's like, yeah.
Did you get that, parents?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Did you get that?
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing.
That's amazing.
I thought that's called catechism.
Yeah.
Being under the means of grace all the time.
Right.
Do you really believe that the word of God is effective?
Yeah.
That prayer actually is effective? Do you really believe that? If you believe that, then you're not afraid of the boredom of your children sitting under it.
You know what was great? I heard just this last week, I preached on, it was a Touching the Ark, and I used the Lewis quote from The Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe that, you know, he's good, but he's not safe.
Yep.
And one of the children communicated to another parent afterward, well, what'd you think of the sermon? And the child says, well, he's good, but he's not safe, but we are safe if we're in Jesus.
That's right.
And I was like,
yeah.
Wow, he got the whole sermon.
Yeah, yeah.
Now he got the whole sermon.
Now he's about to sing how Christ is the cleft in the rock, right? Like, yeah, you know, the child's getting it, right?
He's getting it. And so, this is a third grader.
That's, yeah. This is
a
my
third
point.
Grader.
But here's the thing. Here's what I keep hearing from parents. Well, we're going to go to that church because my child really likes the youth group. They really have a lot of friends there. That's the best place for them to go because they really connect there. And I don't want them to get lost, and I want them to be in part of the church. And they don't really like it here. They don't really connect, or all their friends aren't here.
Well, that's the big one. All their friends.
Yep. So what do you say to that?
It has to do, well, you know, and just to come, I want to answer that. But to come back, so the children's church thing was interesting. And then to sort of say, okay, well, before the children's church, then often what we saw was the pastor call the children forward and give their own special message to the children.
Some churches still do that, sure.
A lot of churches still do.
Yeah.
So a line of demarcation, again, was made that what is about to happen here in the preaching of the Holy Gospel is really not for them, or on the assumption they can't understand it. So we're going to do these little funny anecdotal stories that might apply, and everyone thinks it's cute. And everyone's really happy. It's just this great, cute moment in the worship service where everyone's appeased because the children are smiling. And that's the extent of what they think church is for the children, right? So your question's interesting. I was going to ask the question, have you experienced along the way, how common is it? Have you experienced along the way that a parent will come up to you and say, you know, we like the church, we think it's good, but our children just... They're not connecting with any of the other kids here.
Oh.
So they're not connecting with any of the other kids here. They're not happy. And we've just made this decision that we need to find a church where our children are going to be happy. How often and prevalent has that been in your course?
I mean, I've heard that a number of times. I heard that even at the evangelical church I was at, which had everything, right? Everything you could imagine. I think, though, where I typically hear it, especially as the kids get older, middle school, high school.
Yeah, yes. It's usually that as they cross over into high school.
Where peers right become about a big thing. Where peers become a big thing.
Right.
And I understand.
And they're struggling. All of them are struggling with identity. They're struggling with friends. Girls tend to be harder themselves on girls with girls.
Yep.
So you have all these dilemmas and difficulties, and who really likes their high school years? I mean, they're not the easiest years to live, especially if you don't have a good peer group.
So, or middle school. I have never ever met the adult who said, I can't wait to go back to middle. I wish I could go back to middle school. That would be amazing. You know, they do those right. years over again. Right. But I just think to myself, I've heard that so many times.
Uh-huh.
It usually means one of a number of things. One of the biggest things I'm concerned about is the number of parents who want their kids to be socially accepted and cool and in and all of these kinds of things. And they look at their Reformed church and they think, these kids are nerdy and homeschooled and they're not in the cool crowd and what have you in a lot of cases. So I don't want my kid there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to myself, do you as a parent remember what it was like to be in the in crowd? Is that what you want your kids around, really?
Yeah.
You know?
Have you seen parents who constantly are on the move? So they're on the move in almost every facet of life, but especially when it comes to their children. They're on the move with schools. This didn't go well. On the move with churches constantly. And the one thing I always want to say to them is one of the most important things you can do as parents for your child is simply be stable. And teach them character development in the difficulties to overcome. So you've programmed them in these major life decisions. And then when this is brought to the church, you've programmed them to leave when they face something that's difficult.
And wander around until they find it. And they may never. This is the one thing, is I find this because we program it all the way through college age. They graduate from college and then they get regular jobs in a regular town.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
not that exciting.
It's not that exciting. They're working, you know, the regular work schedule. Now they might even be married or single. Doesn't
matter. Mundaneness of life sets
in. And life is mundane. Uh-huh. The church is mundane. There aren't 1,000 things for them. And then they say, I don't know how to make friends.
Mm-hmm.
Because there isn't like a...
These are the consequences.
Yeah. And I don't know how to relate to older people than me that are outside of my age band mm-hmm. or stage. And they struggle with all of that. And I think because we didn't teach them how to stick through. And so because of that, they leave and they go looking out for it the next place and the next place and the next place. And they don't recognize, you know what? Sometimes it takes a number of years sticking in a hard situation
mm-hmm.
to build those friendships. And you have to build them in other ages and stages. And maybe you should pursue people and not just wait for them to pursue you. And maybe it's okay if the relationships aren't exactly entertaining and fun for you all the time, because the purpose of your life in Christ Church is to serve Christ's people,
right?
Not just to get something from them.
Yeah.
It's almost like all relationships have been commodified. What do I get from it? What is the exchange of goods I'm receiving here? It's like we've taught them that by the way we've moved from place to place to place, always seeking what we get. And when we don't find something we're getting, then we're going to go on to the next thing. And every single relationship has been become a commodity.
You want to say to parents, this is a crucial moment in the training of your child.
Oh, so
not to teach them to run. This is how character's built. And, you know, you want to say endurance is a grace given in the difficult situations of life. And you have to train your children in that. And the decisions you're making now will affect them for life.
Well, and the depth and richness of relationships when you stick with people long term, mm-hmm. you can't reproduce that. You can't find that in short order. I mean, I look at the people I've walked with for 26 years in pastoral ministry now.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't reproduce those relationships. And I watched people walk away early because of difficulty, because of things that weren't in there. And I've watched them wander around from place to place. And I've even had some of them contact me and say, I remember the days when we did this. It was great. I missed those days. And I think to myself, oh, brother, the depth and riches that you've missed by not sticking around.
Mm-hmm.
Not because those days were great, but actually it's been even richer because we've stuck through with each other
mm-hmm.
when those days weren't so great.
Yeah. Well, and often the assumption is the people over there are better people than the people here.
Well.
And, you know, that's ironic because, you know, you not know human nature, right?
And the Holy Spirit's working more powerfully over there because things look more exciting on the outside.
Things look more exciting. And, and usually the sort of common use of criticism is, you know, this church isn't friendly. It's been a conflict with my children. It's not friendly. And my sort of patent answer to that now is, well, then if you're so friendly, we need you to stay, you know?
Yeah, why don't you reach out to people? Help us.
That's what I was saying. I'm affirming what you were saying a minute ago.
Well, I want to say to fathers, though, especially,
mm-hmm.
Your job is to raise your children in the fear and admonition of the Lord, which means the first concern for you as a family when you're assessing a church, should we be a part of it or not, is are you and your wife going to grow here?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're only going to lead your children as far as you go yourself, typically.
That is such a good point. And I always say, if you look at children who grow up unhappy with the church, it was usually, and I'm not saying always, but I say one of the causes of that is that you had a very big complaining spirit in the parents about the church itself. They were not tending to these means, growing themselves. And so you should, you know, if your attitude toward the church is sour and you're a complainer about the church and you don't like what it is on this premise that we're doing things that are old and stuffy or whatever it might be, right? You're building that into your child, into the way he looks at the church.
Well, let me give you an example. So if I moved down to Escondido, which would be great because it's way nicer than Bakersfield, but you know, I love Bakersfield, but if I moved down to Escondido, I couldn't afford to live here. I would have to live in a box. But if I moved here And I was in the city, and I started coming to Escondido URC. I'm sure because this is not my community, because I don't know these people, because I haven't been involved, because you do children's ministry or youth ministry differently than I'm used to doing it, what have you, because your music isn't exactly what our music is, the way you approach it isn't the way our church approached it. All of these things would make me feel like I'm in a foreign place mm-hmm. because people yeah. aren't, you know, I might sit in the one area of the church where the people are less warm, and this is probably the experience, I'm sure, for any visitor. You sit around the right group of people, it's mm-hmm. you have this very warm experience. Mm-hmm. You sit in a different place, you don't have a warm experience. So I'm sure you have visitors who are like, the church was so warm and friendly, and visitors who are like, mm-hmm. the church was so cold and unfriendly. I'm sure you run into both. Okay, I sit in the cold, unfriendly place, and I'm here, and everything's foreign, and my kids don't know anybody, and we start in a school, and they're still trying to get to know people, and you know, whatever, just this experience. We could then judge that this church is a bad place for us to be.
Mm-hmm.
And not stop and ask the question, is the word being preached right. well?
These are the last questions asked.
They're the last questions asked. Because my wife and I are going to grow, and our children are going to grow, under the preaching of the word. Is the word being sung? Like, are the songs mm-hmm. helping us in our hearts come to know the truth about God and his word mm-hmm. so that we're meditating on that? Is it being prayed? Is it being publicly read? Are the sacraments being administered well? Mm-hmm. Are the things that the Holy Spirit has given to grow us in grace being faithfully administered here? I'm not asking those questions first because fundamentally as a parent and as a Christian, I don't really believe that's how the Spirit works
mm-hmm.
in my family.
There it is.
I think it's a lot of other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying it's okay for you to have a garbage children's ministry yeah. where the teachers are ungodly and unprepared. I'm not suggesting that. Or where the music is so poorly played when the piano player plays that it's train wrecking everybody's singing. Or, you know, where the pastor, when he gets up and preaches, we did one on why Johnny can't preach in an episode, where the pastor gets up and preaches, he's essentially read a term paper that he's reading to the congregation. Yeah. It's as dry right. as dirt. I'm not suggesting any of that's okay
right.
at all, right? Right? Like, we're going to be the first guys who are hard on ourselves and others when they don't preach well, or when the music is distractingly bad in the way it's led, or when the children's ministry is not excellent in what's being taught and the people who are teaching.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be the first ones to critique that. But my concern is not that actually people are asking, are the means of grace being administered with excellence? They're really asking, is the social environment and entertainment value and immediate relational connection yeah, right. what I want it to
right,
be?
Right. And I would say this because it's counterintuitive. But the first question that parents will often ask when they come here, what programs do you have for my kids?
Yeah.
What programs? And so, but I would want to challenge parents today to think differently about this. Whenever you have a high program oriented church, whenever everything is given and the great appeal to bringing in new families and their children are the programs, I would suggest that the reason that is so is because of the low view of what is happening in the program. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The actual worship service and the means of grace. The whole thing has been downgraded. The whole thing doesn't have power to it. There's no emphasis on a word and sacrament ministry. The children are not being trained in that. They're not being trained in the basic truth that it pleased God by the foolishness of the message preached to save us and our children. That's how it pleased God. So that is marginalized. These are elevated, and to have parents think, actually, that model should be a red flag, because a highly program-oriented church that only is about the programs, only about everything other than the means of grace and the covenant gathering of the people, should be a red flag to tell you the most important thing is lacking, and that is why people are starving. Oh, brother. You know what I'm saying?
It is exactly right. Like, the program God gave for raising your children in the fear and admonition of the Lord are the parents and the church.
I'm burned out on programs, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I would rather axe more programs because I believe... I'm like the grumpy reformed pastor.
You are so grumpy. Yeah.
But like, I'd ask programs, you know, somebody's going to hear me. I think programs are fine. You can have programs. But my point is that when the means of grace and the most important thing that we do, a gathering covenantally before God, that is God's means of grace to us and to our children. And I just think it's kind of like, you know, some people will say, okay, well, what do you have for counseling in this church? What are your counseling programs? It is amazing when the pulpit is effective how much counseling goes on.
Oh, what did Lloyd Jones argued like 80, 85% and 90% of the counseling issues are resolved.
Are resolved right in the pulpit.
Yeah.
And the most important things are resolved for your children right in the pulpit.
Oh.
And to try to implement that and emphasize that so that parents actually believe that, it's a parental issue. And so that what we want to encourage parents is have courage with your children. Have courage to train them, to teach them to say, no, no, you need to work through this. I'll help you work through this. Hold high the means of grace. Have them sit with you in the pew. Another lost thing today. I told you the story, right, of the time I preached in a church and the youth were in the back making out.
Oh my goodness. No, I did not. You did not tell me about that. They're literally in the back making out.
So the youth pastor, the cool hip youth pastors, and I was invited in to preach. And as I'm preaching, the older people are kind of up front. And I look back and all of a sudden late come in the youth group. And the hip youth pastor sitting there and the couple next to him were, what do you call it, necking.
Really?
They were making out during the sermon.
No.
So I stopped and I said, you in the back. Knock it off.
Good for
and
you.
Everyone turned around. Then I just kept going, you know. I never got invited back. But I thought.
I can't believe you never got invited back.
Yeah, I told you that story.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not getting invited back. But the I think the imagery of the family sitting together, children sitting with their parents, and even young adults sitting with their parents or you know, teenagers sitting with their parents is the model, is the design. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it? I was a youth pastor. I had 200 to 300 high school kids in my youth group, and it was a very popular youth group. And not because of me, the church was huge, but you know, we did a good job with youth ministry. And I remember marking the number of kids who went to the main worship service, not just my youth group, the main worship service, and the number of kids who stuck around at high school. And it was almost a 1-to-1 correspondent. You know, correlation doesn't equal causation, but the correlation coefficient was almost 1. Like every kid who went to the main service stuck around after high school. Every kid who just came to my youth group did not. And I remember telling the elders, what's the point of my ministry? Because like, I mean, do we even need it?
I'm driving them out of the church.
Exactly. You know, but I never had a youth come to me, never young. And I've been with a lot of the young people that were in my youth group or at the church I'm at now, but I never had a young person come to me and say, you know, that time that we were on the Swiss Alps, that did happen, by the way, or that time that we were, you know, we were having pizza together, or that time that you took us to that cool camp, man, changed my life. Never. They might have fond memories. Remember that time you brought in that new contemporary worship song that we didn't know whether we were supposed to be flooded or burned, both imagery of which are bad in the Bible, but it's just, you know, it's all this. Remember that? Nobody. They've come. Remember when you were teaching from this passage in Scripture? Changed my life. Changed my life. Every time. Mm-hmm. Every time. And it's like we've lost sight of that.
And that it was serious.
Yeah.
I think so much of our children's lives today are trivial. We've elevated sports as an idol over, so we haven't got into that. How many parents are out doing sports on Sunday? Think of the idolatry of that. I mean, that's going to step on toes, but come on, it's straight idolatry. It's straight breaking the fourth commandment. You've elevated an idol and you've bowed to it on the day that you should be worshiping God and having your children in church, right? But I think so much is trivial, so much is light. all on this assumption that we can't do anything serious with our kids. Everything has to be fun. Like, that's what life should be for our kids. It should be fun. We need to be down at the trampoline park as much as we can. And so we've not programmed into them the importance of something very solemn and serious, how healthy that is for them in this culture. Like, that's like the taboo thing. You don't want church to be serious. You don't want to deal with the holiness of God. You don't want our kids to have to think that God is holy and that we should tremble all the earth in the presence of the Lord. They have no concept of that.
What's amazing is now they talk about this movement of young men to traditional Catholic mass.
Well, and this,
every morning at 6 a.m., traditional Catholic mass they're going to.
Yeah. Because they want something like this.
They want something more serious.
Yeah.
Because they look around at the world and they think it is a disaster and everybody wants to entertain me. Mm-hmm. And I need something that will bear the weight of my soul.
Yeah.
And so they go to the wrong place for it. But you understand that if we don't teach people.
And that's a shame on us as Protestants.
Absolutely.
That's a shame on us as Protestants. If we've done a hybrid, you know, we've borrowed from the Philistines in our worship to make a new cart. Right. It's just still in my head. But, you know, if we have borrowed from the world to entertain to death. That's a shame on us when people run to Eastern Orthodoxy or Roman Catholicism looking for something authentic because it's reverent to them. They just want something that, and this was the whole emergent church thing. This is why droves of the boomers' children, they didn't figure this out, left and went to something like Mars Hill. It was on this kind of thing. You know, they darkened the sanctuary. It had a sense of something more solemn, a pastor who'd yell at them.
For an hour, yeah. For an hour.
You know, yeah. So, but you see the confusion there, right? Like they just totally rejected this light, superficial, very, I also think tied to just the prosperous American culture of prosperity. So much of this is we've had it so good. We don't know how to take God seriously anymore. But that's why I love previous generations, you know? Whatever fault you might say, oh, they're stuffy traditionalists, they're this, they're that, you know, I can't stand what seems to me is dead traditionalism and all that. You could say that, maybe there's some of that. But the one thing you have to ask is, why did they do what they did? And then the second thing you have to ask is, it seems to me they took God more seriously than us.
In many cases, that's true. And I just think you have to ask the question, does the worship of this church actually bear the weight of my soul? Mm-hmm. And this light, fluffy, entertaining stuff is a nice distraction from my soul from what's I'm really facing. But it doesn't bear the weight of my soul. Like, no one wants, I tell the story, I went to a hospital with a dead child. Mm-hmm. That family did not ask, can we sing the latest radio Christian radio songs?
Right.
They knew those songs would not bear the weight of their soul in that moment.
That's right.
And I mean, we're facing that kind of world, a world of sin and death. And we can try to put our heads in the sand and program worship and the church such that it's all entertaining. We pretend like it's not happening. But the bankruptcy of that's going to become obvious when you're confronted with life.
Life's pretty short.
Yep.
You don't know the lifespan of your children. They're not guaranteed tomorrow and you're not guaranteed tomorrow. So the most important choice you make is, am I sitting myself under a true and faithful church where the gospel's being preached to me and my children? This is, you know, I think you got to go back to the strong warning. This is a second commandment issue. This is a second commandment issue. You don't have the right as parents. You're supposed to be the protection over them, as you started this whole podcast with, training them in the fear and admonition of the Lord, teaching them what fear is, what reverence, what awe is, what trembling before the Lord is. You don't have the right, in light of the second commandment, to say, I'm gonna do and put my children into danger zone in false worship so that they're happy. That means you've made your child an idol. I think of the Psalm 51, and this is in the context of worship. Consider this, you who forget God, lest I tear you in pieces. Mm. He who draws near to me and orders his conduct aright. He's talking about worship. I will show the salvation of the Lord. So this matters for our children. And, you know, it gets to our whole, at the end of the day, this is a covenantal view of what's happening here that is lost, I think, in the American church. The promise is to you and to your children. God cares about your children. God loves your children and told us to put a sign on the children, which is baptism. Another problem in this whole mix, because they've been taught they're not really members of the church until of their own volition and will. They can make that decision, Arminian theology. So from the beginning, everything seems to be working against the children having a place in this, in the American society, in the church.
You just called all the Baptists Arminians. I just enjoyed watching
not,
that
not,
happen.
Not all of them. I told you we get in trouble. There's a blessed inconsistency.
That's a different program.
There's a blessed inconsistency that some of them do believe in the sovereignty of God and the saving of our children, Reformed Baptists, right?
You're just saying they're participating in Arminian practice.
They just haven't let go of...
That would be a great show. We should totally do that sometime.
I'm going to get in trouble on that one. But, you for like drawing that out so that everyone heard that. Not what I was totally saying. However, some would say that. But I do want to say the covenantal view of our children is so important. Abraham, they're included. And that means they worship with us.
Yeah.
And that means we lead them as to what's best for them because our children don't know what's best for them.
Yeah. And we obviously agree that the serious Baptist, practically, whether they covenantally buy that,
right,
in their practice as parents, they believe that's their responsibility.
They do.
Yeah. And so I'm thankful for that inconsistency.
Yeah. Blessed inconsistency, as I said.
I've had plenty of them in my life, for which I give
so
thanks.
So have I. Anyone's fitted, I have all kinds of them. I have to repent of every day.
Yeah. So, me too.
Well, so positive view of your children. You know, it really is remarkable in a day where we've elevated the children to the place in our lives of supremacy. And we want the best for our children, right? Best schools, best sports, best this, best clothes, best food. Everything centered around the child, cult of the child in our day. And here God is saying, I've got something really good for them. I've got the best thing for them that they need because they're sinners too and don't know it. And the parents could intervene in that and say, no thanks.
Yeah, but
that
there's some patience and work to get at that. And I think the one thing you left out of what we want for our children, you know, we talked earlier about helicopter parents, and I made the joke about snowplow parents, is we want to clear the path in front of our children. So we want the clearest path to all that that is possibly available to
them.
And
easiest.
That's exactly what that means.
Yeah.
Is that's why they can't take on hard things, because we keep clearing the hard things out of their way. So they never have to face them. And one of the things I would tell parents is don't snowplow the means of grace out of your child's life, thinking that somehow there's some little golden, easy path to Christian godliness.
That's right. It's the difficulties that shape character. And you have to lead your children through that.
Yep.
You have to lead I think it's in Nehemiah 8. When finally the nation hadn't been listening and they'd all been carried off to Babylon, separated from their children, was an awful time. First thing they do when they get back is Ezra constructs a pulpit.
Yeah.
You know, constructs a pulpit and stands on a platform of wood. And remember, it says, gather your little ones.
Yep.
And they read the law from early in the day till midday. That's a lot of Levitical law reading for the children.
It's quite the children's program. It's
quite the children's program.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's amazing the little ones were there.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
Well, hope that helps. Thanks for your thoughts.
You're welcome.